Hi, everybody, I'm Jim.
Hi.
All right, so you're in for a treat tonight. We have a family in recovery. Yay. So excited about that. Worked very hard to find them. I had to hunt down the Alateen myself, throw a spear at him, tie him up, drag him in here. So I guess which one of you is going first? Bob. All right, so it's my great pleasure to introduce Bob.
I'm Bob S., grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm also Bob Shuttleworth, grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which normally I wouldn't say in this meeting, but tonight we're doing a family in recovery, and we have a member of Al-Anon and a member of Alateen, and I'm doing both, because that's what I need today. So I'm going to give you a little bit of my past, a little bit of my story, a little bit of how I got to Al-Anon as well. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. If you can't hear me, let me know.
Can't hear you.
Really? I need help always. Anyway, I grew up with a couple of untreated Al-Anons. Didn't know it at the time. Found it out many years later. Both of my parents grew up in families that were affected by alcoholism, but it didn't really show overtly, and I didn't see them drink enough to get drunk. But by the time I was a teenager, that was a regular occurrence for me. And I didn't realize I was an alcoholic until my first day at Fort Dix. And I realized I'd made a fatal mistake. I was getting drafted, so I joined up to get a better deal. And when I got there, I realized, oh, shit, they're going to tell me what to do here. And I couldn't drink the way I wanted to. That was my first sobriety for about 2 months. And that was 1972. And then 4 years later, I was trying to make time with this girl that lived next door to me in Pasadena. So I instantly became a student of Chinese medicine and Japanese cooking and a few other things. And I had a meal at the house of these two girls that lived next door. And the one girl says, I expressed an interest in the food. And she said, she gave me a stack of books. She says, read these books and don't come back until you have. I was like, oh, okay. So I go and start reading the books. For some reason, I stopped smoking dope and stopped drinking that day. And I had about 5.5 months until I was tempted to do so again. That was my next sobriety, and that was 1976, starting in January 1st. Never heard of AA. I'd seen The Lost Weekend. I thought that was a great movie. I thought they should show it in high school. And 10 years later, I had been in the restaurant business. I'd given this kid a job there. And 10 years later, he was my best drinking buddy, and he disappeared on me. A couple months later, he calls me up and needs a ride. So, of course, I was going to help him out. So on the way over, he gives me the AA sales pitch. Because it was a commitment to his home group at the Pacific Group. So I go to my first meeting in AA, to the largest meeting in the world. And I heard a speaker that didn't impress me at all. She'd been born with a silver spoon in her mouth. She's got a foundation named after her now, and it's a big deal. Anyway, I lasted about 2 hours. I think I had 2 hours of sobriety that year. That was the class of 86. I was 86th out of that class. Then I went to, that was given the literature. I found it when I was 6 months sober a few years later. I went to an AA wedding drunk, an AA bachelor party at the Tropicana. I watched a guy mud wrestle, and there was two of us drinking, and everybody else wasn't. It was the PG men stag. But then what happened, for years I would be in the urinal of some bar saying, get me out of this one, or help me, all these crisis prayers. Well, eventually that paid off. I was watching a Super Bowl in 1988, and it got around the third quarter when Washington, I think, was killing them. And I run out of beer, and it was like, I'm not buying any more beer for this effing game. And so temporarily I stopped. Then all of a sudden, I had a memory lapse of about 10 days. I don't remember a single thing. But obviously those prayers were answered. It was on the 11th day. I had a breakdown in the morning before I went to work. I was driving my first wife, to to a job downtown. I had a job downtown, and the kids to two separate schools. And for about 2 hours, I was crying and just going through all this stuff. And then it occurred to me, I need to go to a meeting. Wow, I'd been to one meeting. Of course, the one thing he did that I did do is he gave me a tape of Barney Morris. He's dead now, so I can say his name. He was a personality in town, so it was interesting. I'd listen to his tape when I was bored, and he'd wake up in some airport, and he'd go find a newspaper to see where he was. And, you know, it was interesting. So that's where I guess I learned I need to go to a meeting. So I called John up. I said, hey, I know you need to go to a meeting. He goes, well, I'm going to one tonight. So I went to a church basement in Culver City, and that was my first meeting. I heard an outlaw biker tell his story. It wasn't anything like mine, but I almost immediately identified with his anger. And then he started talking about his daughter, a 9-year-old daughter at home who was looking through a crack in the door to see which way he was going so she could go the other way. And then it was like, oh, crap, I've got an 8 and a 9-year-old at home, back my daughter, sitting right there. And it was like, I got to do something. So I came back the next night. And then they're starting to bother me, of course, by somewhere in the second or third day, I only had about half the meeting ask me if I had a sponsor yet. So I asked my friend, John, would you sponsor me? He said, well, I'm not supposed to sponsor my friends or relatives, but I'll tell you what to do until you find somebody. Then it occurred to me, we had a housewarming a few months before where we bought a house, not because of my resourcefulness, but because I borrowed money from my in-laws. And I remembered this one guy, as my kids came to me and said, don't give Tony anything to drink, he's allergic to alcohol. His kids had told my kids. So after I got sober there, I was thinking, allergic to alcohol? So I called him up, turned out he was in AA, he had 4 years of sobriety. So I still see him at Pathfinders, where I met Shirley right there. And Shirley is an esteemed Al-Anon old-timer of over 40 years, which probably most of the people in this room don't even know. And she's the reason I'm in Al-Anon today. Anyway, I got Tony as a sponsor, and he was my sponsor for the first 2.5 years. Because of a bad car, I spent most of my first 2 years at Dunsmore, where I got to know Candy. In fact, I knew Candy during that time, but she never had more than 2 days of sobriety, so when I first met her when she was sober, I didn't even recognize her. You know, it was like, do I know you? You know, it was funny. And then I went to, well, it was 8 years of sobriety. I met many people that were spouses of AA members. Many AA brothers of mine, their wives, seemed to be doing better than they were. They were nicer. My sponsor's wife was a lot nicer than he was. And I'd been sending people to Al-Anon for years that had relationship problems, so I thought, I should go and see where I'd been sending all these people. So I started attending the Stepped Up group in 96 and 97. And I was very impressed. They're very organized, it was very friendly. In my very first meeting, I heard Benoit Shaw give a main pitch, and I thought, wow, how can an Al-Anon talk be more interesting than an AA talk? I've heard a lot of AA talks, and this one was better. And I knew her husband. And the funny thing was, I couldn't even tell where he was in the story. You know, there was so many different guys and so many different things going on. I couldn't tell where Jim was in his past. Anyway, so then I got corralled into some other AA commitment and stopped going. And then I had this friend of mine. I'd sought out my old sponsor again, and I went to this dismal little club in Atwater called the Pathfinders. I remember, because that's my first thought when I went there in maybe 88 or so, I thought, geez, another dismal little Alano club. And because I'd been such a big deal in the Pacific group, well, thank God I survived that. Anyway, I went to this meeting with Tony. It took me about a month to get to the 7 a.m. meeting. I've been a night meeting guy. It's like 7 a.m.? How can anybody go to a meeting at 7 a.m.? So about a month later, I finally got to the meeting. And it was like, wow, after a couple of times, like this group. And then there was this older lady. I thought, God, she's got to have 100 years of sobriety. She's so darn serene. And I find out she's like, what are you, 6 or 7 years behind me? How come you're doing so much better than I am? You know? So for a year, she's prodding me, come to this meeting at Radford, and which has been my home group in both programs for years, the Radford Double Winners meeting. So finally I get over there, and the first three, they have an AA leader and an Al-Anon leader each week at the 9 a.m. Radford Double Winners meeting. So I hear the Al-Anon, first three Al-Anons I heard lead that meeting, a gentleman who I can't remember who it was, and two ladies, Kathy and Katie, one who sponsors my wife, and the other one sponsors her. And I heard these three Al-Anons, and I remembered, I'd look at them, I'd prejudge them and say, they've got nothing I want. What's this clown got, you know? And immediately there'd be so many pearls of wisdom coming out, and it was like, wait a minute, I was listening to this years ago. Why didn't I get it? Where have I been? By the third week, I was hooked. It was like, damn it, I've got to go to this program too. Why, you know, this is why things, this is the missing link. This is why I've had trouble at jobs. This is why the first marriage dissolved after 24 years. And, you know, the amends have been made. I'd say we're fairly good friends today. We're both remarried. I have a great relationship with my two kids and my grandchildren. And anyway, how much time do I have?
11 minutes.
Okay, great. When my the story of my dad, when my mother passed away when I was 4 years sober, she had Alzheimer's. I took her to meetings, went to the Angelino Club to the big speaker meeting on Sunday morning with her. She loved, because there was a couple of blue hairs there, that she fit right in with them. She liked the cake, and we bring the kids, and the kids would eat the cake, and Tony and our kids. And then I remember, I think I played an AA tape for her one day on the way to the meeting. She goes, oh, that's like Aunt Agnes. That's like the tapes she used to play out on the lake. I thought, oh, Aunt Agnes is an AA, okay. And a smart one, too, because my Canadian relatives, I'm from Canada, they know how to drink. She'd get them out on the boat on the lake where it was a big, almost like a houseboat. Once you're out there for the day. So she'd have a captive audience, and she'd play her AA tapes. She's an in-law, but she fits right in with my family. No control problems. In fact, my dad, who had been a World War II vet, was a Canadian drill sergeant, commando, started a commando school, became an officer, was in D-Day, and fought in Normandy, and was wounded there. And when I got to basic training, I realized I'd grown up in boot camp. I never realized it till I got there. It was like the Great Santini, except we didn't have basketballs. He was a nice guy. We had hockey pucks instead, but we didn't bounce them off each other. He almost never laid a hand on me, and that's because his dad used to kick the shit out of him when he was a kid, and all his brothers and sisters, because his dad didn't drink at all. His grandfather had been a big alcoholic, so his dad and my grandfather didn't drink at all, but he passed that anger on to the family. And probably the most successful candidate of the whole bunch was my dad, somehow. You know, anyway, I didn't really realize that until years later. Anyway, he passed on in 2001, beginning of the year. In fact, we were in the room with them, my daughter and my sister and my ex, and we were talking, making stories about Canada, et cetera. My daughter goes, is he breathing? And we looked over and he passed. And then the next day, we're having breakfast, and then it started raining heavily, and I had to drive my daughter and my ex-wife to the airport. And I'm driving back, and I'm on the phone with a friend of mine from Canada who also knew my dad. And it was raining heavily. It was a straight shot back to my dad's trailer, and for some reason, I took a wrong turn. And I drive for a living, I have for a long time, and it was like, come on. So I turned back, and I couldn't see. I mean, you see where Roger is right here in the third row. That's as far away as I could see. And I'm driving, and my dad's old Toyota, and I'm trying to see. And all of a sudden, I hit the brakes. There's a train going by. And I tell my friend, I said, man, it's like the Twilight Zone. This train was going by. I almost ran into it. And she knew my dad's story, how he'd ridden the rails in the 30s looking for work in Canada. She goes, oh, that's your dad saying goodbye. So I'm on the road a lot. So I'd see a train, you know, a lot. I'd be out on the road, I'd see a train, and a tear would come out. that was that next level. I'd had one plateau of like spiritual experience, and this was, from that time on, I'd had a conscious contact with my higher power from then on. So it was a few years later when I managed to stumble into that double enders meeting and finally start approaching the program of Al-Anon as well. I didn't take it all at once. You know, I was about 2 years in when, that was the year I was 20 years sober, I had three different people at the St. Milano Club offer to take me outside and give me an attitude adjustment. And I thought, you know, maybe I should start working these steps in Al-Anon too. And I believe at that time my wife was already attending. With my first wife, she didn't drink at all. I tried to get her to go to Al-Anon. I heard about Al-Team, but didn't know much about it. She didn't drink. She didn't want to go. I had the problem. She used to tell the kids, just whatever he says, let it go in one ear and out the other. Worked for her. So I tried that same story with my second wife when we got married. She moved here and we got married soon after. Trying to get her to go to Al-Anon. Actually, what happened was after about 6 months of being here, our relationship was going sour, so I started going to more meetings. She goes, well, when I first met you, you weren't going to all those meetings. And I want to say, well, actually I was, but I was just taking a little break when I met you and drove up to Sacramento every weekend for 9 months. But anyway, she moved down here, and within a few months, it was getting a little rocky, so I'm going to more meetings. Then we were going to a church where they had some weird rules and we had to get married to become members since we were already living together. So we decided, changed our mind. We were getting married, then we weren't getting married. Then we went in and got married. Then one day, I said the wrong thing. She rips the oak coffee table off its base and flips it at me. And I felt like I was in a Jackie Chan movie. The thing was going, and I jump up on the leather couch and it drops on my feet. And soon after that, I came up with the idea. I told her, you know, I go to this meeting on Ventura Boulevard and these women have these fancy purses and boots, but I don't know what kind they are. So she had to come and see. So we're sitting in that meeting and they're announcing around the room, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an Al-Anon. I'm a double winner. She goes, what do I say? Well, just tell me you're an Al-Anon. So after she identified, I go, well, you're an Al-Anon now. So we started going to that meeting. We went to a couples meeting where I met Lily and I met Ron and a few other people, like Pat and Candy, etc. And that was interesting. The ride home from the double winner meeting was a treat every week. Now, the couples meeting was in La Cañada, and we live in Tujunga. Short drive. That was a Tuesday night meeting, but I can describe the ride home in one word. Risky. Usually, I'd try to get the window closed because she was already screaming before we got to the parking lot. Somewhere around the third month, she started reading the directory. She decided to take her son to Al-Anon. And then we started going to separate meetings. She went to Al-Anon meetings. And things started to change little by little. I'll let her tell her story. But, you know, I'll tell you, by the time she got to the third step, it was a completely different household. And I really never knew much about Al-Anon. I'd heard about it. I'd heard about Al-Anon since I first got sober, and I have an immense respect for it. Both programs have very similar histories. You know, there's a lot of talk in Al-Anon today about some people of sort of distancing us from AA, and I think that's a big mistake for a lot of reasons. One, most of the ideas in the big book come from non-alcoholics. Like Sam Shoemaker, some 150 ideas in the big book come from him alone. He was a non-alcoholic. And most of the ideas in that book come from non-alcoholics. And they were sitting in those same meetings for many years. Those original Al-Anon members considered themselves members of AA, even though they weren't drinkers. In fact, it was the 80 different separate groups that were trying to get listed in New York as family groups that Bill prodded Lois, begged her to start another program. You know, so, and the rest is history. Anyway, and Alateen, I'd heard about Alateen. I didn't really know enough about it. I wish I could have got my kids involved when they were little. They seemed to turn out in spite of me. Although I happen to know when I went to meetings every night, there was just a general rejoicing at home every night. Oh, he's gone, he's gone. We're, you know, we can have fun now, he's gone. You know? So 7 days a week, that was the story for years. And my kids have turned out pretty well. I'd say I've made amends. I have some beautiful grandchildren, 3 and 1 on the way. And I'm very blessed. Alateen is a great program. Lois, near the end of her life, what she wished was that all 3 programs could work together. And according to some of my friends that used to be in Alateen, like David right here, the meetings used to be very large. In fact, before the registration process many years ago, some of those meetings had 3 sponsors, 2 Al-Anon and 1 AA. And this was a common practice in Alateen meetings many years ago. And the meetings were larger. And I have to say, having been a member of AA as well, there's a ton of AA kids out there that could use that if somehow we could get the message to them a little better. Maybe if we could communicate a little better with AA about that, because it's a wonderful program. It's an absolutely wonderful program. I remember one drive to Sacramento where we had to stop for some kind of junk food immediately, or my wife was going to sever my head before I even stopped the car. And this was not that long ago, a couple of years ago. So I stopped. I'm bringing the food back to the car, and 7's explaining the Serenity Prayer to him. So there's the beauty of Alateen at work. And then recently, my buddy Gordon, he's telling us a story from SCAC. You know, occasionally you get a story now and then. This is one I can repeat. Some of the parents were bringing their kids in, and they were looking at the different Alateen members, and some of them looked risky, and you know, some of them looked safer, and they were pointing out something. And like, they pointed a 7 out at the time. He had a spiked mohawk, and he's like 6'5". He said, well, I don't know about leaving our kids with him. And Gordon said, well, you know what? You're actually better off leaving him with him than with the clean-cut kids, you know, because he's like an old-timer there. He knows the deal, and it's really worked well for him. Getting close? Time's up?
Yep.
Okay. So I would have to say, just very briefly, I want to thank Willie for leading this meeting. He's definitely been a hero of mine here. Dale F., who's now up in Grass Valley, was my Al-Anon sponsor for a long time. Now Danny out in the West Valley is. I've always loved this meeting. And one last thing about control. See, in AA, my expertise was control. I was the master of commitments in big meetings. So when I first came to this meeting and they read the commitment list, they used to do that around here, I thought, wow, this is a neat meeting. They got a lot of commitments. Too bad they don't know what they're doing. Well, I'd run meetings of 500 people. I knew how to get 275 people to show up. I had the list memorized. I took the thing, and if somebody didn't show up, I did it myself. You know. And the one thing I knew was you had to have maybe 30 or 40 people on setup, and you had to have about 75 on cleanup so that 40 or 50 would show up. You know? And I looked at the list, and there wasn't very many cleanup people. So I thought, okay, what do I know? So then I find out, I'm doing looking at the workbook in Al-Anon, and there I see character defects, control. And I'd seen it on the list before, but obviously I hadn't really read it very well. And then it dawned on me, wow, my one asset in AA, and it's a defect. So I want to thank a lot of people. I could thank half the room. I got to thank Shirley for bringing me back to Al-Anon. Her husband passed recently, and she is just the biggest sweetheart I know. And you know, way ahead of me in Al-Anon, and spiritually a giant here. And of course, all the old timers here, you know, Ron, and all the guys that have done a lot of sponsoring around here and done a lot of work. You know, I'm somebody that I've now found out I have to be a relief pitcher. I'm not a starter. So I'm the guy that shows up, and when somebody doesn't show up, I do the job. You don't give me the job because I start tabulating statistics. You know? I'll know how many people are going to be here, how many chairs are going to sit up. It's just, you don't want me. It's like, you don't bring me there. You don't bring me to the business meeting. There's certain things you just don't do. Anyway, I want to thank y'all, and now we're going to hear from, do you want to introduce them or what? Can I do it? Can I do it? Our allergy speaker is 7.
Hi, I'm 7.
Best.
And I'm a grateful member of Owl Team. And if you couldn't tell, I live with two control freaks, and it's so much fun. So much fun. If I didn't do something right, I had to do it again twice. Once to make sure it was right, and twice again to make sure I did it right the next time. And that was the Al-Anon. Also, growing up with an active alcoholic as well, 395 miles away, I never felt more free because he'd be so off his rocker, I could do whatever I want. So after going from two control freaks to freedom, to two control freaks to freedom, I came out great, considering the fact. Ever since I was a little kid, I always looked towards wheels that moved really fast because they were lots of fun, and I think that was a good start to my higher power because it helped me get away from the problems that my father would bring towards my table. And, I have to thank him a lot because without him, I'd probably be that kid with a silver spoon in his mouth not knowing how to tie his own shoes at 19. because without him, I wouldn't know how to cook after myself, do my own laundry, or any of that. Because I had a controlling Al-Anon my whole life, like, let me do this for you. Please, don't just let me do this. Sit down. No, let me do this for you. And she still does it. it's not all bad now. I guess I found out about the program through my mom, who dragged me to an Owl Teen meeting. Now, the word teen scared me because I was 10 years old at the time, and the first thought in my mind when I heard it was, there's going to be a bunch of, like, 17, 18, 19-year-olds at this meeting. They're all going to be, like, these tall, big people, and I'm, like, this little 10-year-old with a Game Boy. I don't want to be here. Turns out I was the oldest person at the meeting, and it was a preteen meeting. And it was a blast. I had so much fun, and I learned a lot about what was going on in my dad's, like, mental disease and how I can't really do much to stop it, but I can, you know, help myself out by using the literature daily, which I do every day, a lot more than once. Probably daily at school, just one word at a time. I find it great that I can use the program's literature in not just dealing with the alcoholic and the Al-Anon problems, but using it in daily life, every day, whether it's just trying to get past the next math problem or whether it's trying to not get hit by the car bombing down the hill on my skateboard. All lots of fun. There's gum under here, and I am touching it. That is gross. Did not know that one. I have to be up here for 20 minutes. Great. Now living life with having the program in my mind, it's a wonderful thing. I'm a lot more of a calm person than when I was a kid. At least I like to think so. I don't get angry too easily, which is awkward living with two control freaks. You'd think I'd be the angriest person. But I'm actually a really calm, mild-mannered guy. Not like what Bob said when about the newcomer going to SCAC. Like, I don't know if I trust him with that kid. I don't know if you should either, but you know, I'm a pretty nice guy. Just give me 5 minutes alone with you. Everything will be gravy. I've met lots of great people through the program. Lots of people that I probably would have never met on my own, actually. And it's kind of weird outside of program having friends because they have a broad understanding of, you know, this, like, we have this, the pretty, like, close to the same story, you know, like, terrible drunk father and like or a drug addict mother, like, you know, anything that affected by the disease. And I tell lots of them about meetings, but some of them just never want to listen to me. And it's kind of sad because lately, lots of friends that I grew up with going to middle school and even elementary school now, I've noticed, like, on their stupid social media pages that they're just, you know, living their lives as they think teenagers should, and all more power to them if that's what they want to do. But it's hard to hang out with old friends now because all they want to do is get either really drunk or really doped out or something. It's not fun for me. I don't really get why they do it, but hopefully they'll find the right path eventually. And whatever I could do with step 12, which is spreading the word, whatever I could do with that, I try to, but nobody really listens when they're all messed up on alcohol. So it's actually kind of fun watching people trip over themselves. But I found my higher power around the time I was 14. Well, it's always really been there, but and there's actually this punk song that I found when I was 14. The opening begins with "My God Rides a Skateboard," and that's basically where I was like, oh, I found my higher power now. Because ever since I was a little kid, just going up and visiting my dad for the 3 months that I'd be out there, every day from morning till nightfall, I'd be at the skate park. Did not want to be around him. So, except for some days, you know, he'd be okay. You know, he only had like a beer or two, and it's just, still don't even want to be around the smell of it. But, you know, I was there to spend time with him. But for the majority of the time, whenever I really needed to get away, I'd just go ride my skateboard, and everything would just flood out of my brain for the moment being. And I think I found a higher serenity with that. And to this day, I still do it for that reason, and nothing more than self-gain, really. It's quite an awesome thing. Now, with the program being in all three of our lives, I will go off of what Bob said a little bit here. My mom was kind of a little bit of the physical crazy Al-Anon. Not only was a table thrown at Bob, but multiple cell phones, a couple TV remotes, if I remember right. A chair was flipped over once. Good memories. Can't wait to explain it to my grandchildren. I've seen the program work wonders, even though some days I'm like, are you even going to meetings? I mean, I understand work is stressful. Don't get me wrong, it is. But I feel like I shouldn't have to explain to you one day at a time every day. it's a great program. I've been coming to, well, not necessarily the meeting part portion, but the daycare ever since I was a little kid, and I've noticed that the members of the Al-Anons are all individually unique in their own way, to say so at the best. And I just kind of knew that this would be like a good crowd of people to be hanging around. And unlike the friends that I've made growing up in my tiny town of Tahunga something, that I knew that, you know, Alateen would take me to a more broader spectrum and introduce me to cool new people all over the place. And it has. Just even all over Southern California, going to SCAC and SoCal and AFG and just meeting all, like, local Alateens from those areas, is noticing that they just have the same story as me, and we can connect on a level instantly. And just have pound six or seven monsters and stay up for 3 days straight. Which, if you guys didn't know, that's what we do. We like to drink energy drinks, stay up really late, and yeah, talk about our problems. I have no clue what my life would be like if it wasn't for the program, and I don't even want to know. Probably around when I was going to the program in like 3-4 years, I was like wondering, you know, what kind of person would I be if I, you know, never moved away from Sacramento? What kind of person would I be if I never joined Alateen and all these other questions? And I realized it doesn't matter because that's all the past and there's nothing we could do to change it. You got to live for today, right now, in the moment. Don't worry about tomorrow. It's not promised to you. You just got to do what you can do today. And that's pretty much it. I did not plan on speaking for 20 minutes. Actually, I had no backup plan. completely winging it, by the way. How much longer do I have? And for the Al-Anon portion, I'd like to welcome my mother.
Hi, my name is The Warden. I guess, according to my child, I have no recovery. But I do assure you I have been coming here for 7 years and 10 months and one day. Weren't they great? They were really great. So I guess I'll do the thing so I can be right in line with my kid. He's a doll. So I have to say that, yes, Bob is right. I did throw a table at him. And that was our 5th year of marriage. And I broke down because I never threw anything that big. It was always small stuff. Though AA perfect. The next morning the top was on it and it was fixed and right where it was supposed to be. Total AA. You know. So he did say to me something about purses and boots, and you have to understand that when I moved here from Sacramento, the only thing I knew was how to get home and to work and back. I was scared to death of all these freeways. There's only 2 in Sacramento. And I've been here 5 years. And the only time I could go shopping or go anywhere was if my husband would take me. And that wasn't really fun. It got to be where he would say, "All right, but I'm not carrying your purse this time." But he did. He always did. So this is actually what he said about that meeting. "You've never been to Ventura. They have nice purses and boots in Ventura, and I'll take you shopping after." So I said, okay. So we walk into this meeting, and he sits me down next to Shirley, who's right there, and in the front row. And on this wall behind us are these multiplied by 10. I mean, the signs were huge right in front of my face. And the only thing I looked at was the big sign that said the 12 steps. And I was reading those and I was thinking, is this what my husband's supposed to be doing? He's not doing that. You know? So when I identified as an Al-Anon, this little lady, Thelma, may she rest in peace, a doll, just a doll, gives me this packet and says, "Here's your newcomer packet." So the first thing I open up is, it had a brown cover, now I think it's beige. It had the do's and don'ts and the 20 things about maturity, and I'm reading all those and I'm like, "Fucking kidding me, he doesn't go to this program." You know, because I'm reading this stuff and he's not like this. He's never done step 8 with me. So I think to myself that, okay, I got 12 months, there's 12 steps, I'll get them straight in a year, and we'll get along. So I made a New Year's resolution that I would help my husband do these steps. Now, this is all in my head. So the other thing that I saw that day was two people sitting in front, and they had 7 minutes each to share something. And I don't remember which was which, but all I can remember is, again, my husband doesn't sound like them at all. What is he doing every day? Because he was going to meetings every night. It got to be where I was grateful that he was going to meetings every night. My house seemed a little bit calmer. And I learned in Al-Anon, actually, that it had nothing to do with him leaving. It was me. My child, when he was very little, used to say to me, "Why do you have a sad face?" And I go, "My face isn't sad. I'm just thinking." But he would say that all the time. "Why is your face sad? Why is your face sad?" He started saying that to me when he was about 3. That's when I left his father. And we had to go through the courts. And I was sad because his dad chose pot, meth, and booze over his family of me and 7. So yeah, I was sad. But I didn't realize that it was on my face. And he continued to say that till he was about 11, and maybe a little bit older. I looked at the back of this book that gave all these meetings, and I saw this thing that said Alateen, and I thought, well, maybe if I take 7 to this meeting, he will learn how to deal with his father in a different way. So I took him to this little Friday night meeting, and I went in there, and I had him by the hand, and I sat down, and they said, "Get out." And I said, "No, that's my child." They said, "Well, then you'll have to go and take him with you." So I had a choice, and this was the first time I had a choice, or that I knew I had a choice, to either go sit in my car, go to the Al-Anon meeting next door that they pointed to, or take my kid and walk away. So I thought, I think it was March, so it wasn't very warm outside yet. So I thought I would go and sit in the Al-Anon meeting. And it was in this little preschool, so they had these little tiny chairs and we were real close to the floor. It was quite humbling, although I didn't think of it that way. And all these women and 2 men were in this meeting. There was probably 10 people. And I remember vividly them reading the do's and don'ts and thinking, "No wonder you're a mess. You're doing it all wrong. How can you get anybody to do anything unless you lose your temper?" And so I knew this wasn't the place for me. And that was it. I didn't fit in with the double winner because my husband pissed me off every time we drove home. I couldn't go to the couples meeting because my husband pissed me off every time we drove home. So now I got this Al-Anon meeting that I'm in because my child is trying Alateen. I can't do this. This is just a bunch of sad, you know what. And this is what's going on in my head as I'm listening to everybody complain about or whatever their problems are, whatever. And when the meeting was over, they said, "No, we wait for the Alateens to come and we're going to say the prayer." And the first kid out of that door was 7, going, Mom, it was fun. I love it. We got to come back. Can we come back? Can we come back?" On and on. And I'm like, "Yes, we can come back." So that was my Friday night. And he did not let me forget. Because I would think, "Oh, maybe he won't remember. Maybe he won't remember." You know, because when he was little, in the shopping cart, when I'd go around the store, he would ask, you know how you see those crying babies? So he would ask me, "Can I have that?" And I'd go, "Sure." And he wouldn't cry. We'd go down here and he'd say, "Can I have that?" And I'd say, "Sure." And he wouldn't cry. I never put the stuff in the basket. I just said yes. But he never remembered that. So I thought, oh, he's not going to remember this meeting either. It wasn't true. He knew a Friday when a Friday came, and he actually knew the time, and he actually would tell me how to get there. Wow. I remember that. Because remember we got lost, and he said, no, turn around. He was like, no, turn around, you're going the wrong way. I'm like, no, I'm not, no, I'm not. And he was right. So, crazy. So I continue going to this meeting and listening to y'all, and I meet this little short girl. Her husband comes to this meeting, and I'm not going to say her name because then you guys will know, and I guess you're not supposed to do that, but anyway, she's short and she's not here. And getting ready to go to Camp Sealy. She would sit next to me every week, and she had this high voice. And our whole family, we're Italian, and our voices are low. So this high voice would kind of irritate me, but she would go, how many meetings do you go to a week? What meetings do you go to? Do you have a sponsor? Blah, 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 blah. So I would just let her, and I'd go, no, yeah, no, no, okay, bye. And then I don't know what it was. Oh, I do know. It was, they were all going to this place for dinner after. It was called Carl's Jr. And because all the kids had to have hamburgers, and that was another thing Seven started. Can we go? Can we go? Can we go? So we started going to the meeting, and then the meeting after the meeting, where I would sit with these women who had children, and they would talk about their problems and stuff, and it was like another meeting that I didn't fit in, that I just didn't fit. And I kept doing that because my child, you know, I love my child. He loved this Alateen thing. And this girl talked me into getting a sponsor. She goes, I have a wonderful sponsor. Why don't you ask her to be, well, you should ask her. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. Get her birth date, the time she was born, and where she was born, and I'll get right back at you. So I go home, and I'm supposed to do that for you. So I go home, and I go online, and I put all this stuff in, because there's this wonderful website. I used to do charts without the website. It was hard. And I do her astrological chart, and I do the whole thing. And usually when people ask me to do theirs, I never read it, but I was reading this one. So I'm reading this chart, and I'm figuring out these planets that her and I share, and who is going to have more power? Who is going to be stronger? So I asked her to be my sponsor. So she said yes, and I presented her with her chart, which wasn't fair because she didn't have mine. She didn't have my chart. So it really wasn't fair. But in my head, I was like, well, here's another person that will never be able to tell me what to do based on where the stars were aligned. There's another thing about this, too. I'm an Air Force brat. We moved every 17 months from base to base, so I grew up not having friends. You make a friend and you lose them. You make a friend and you lose them. So I had acquaintances. So that's what women were all my life to me, were acquaintances. And I was 55 when I came to program. So I had 55 years of just being your acquaintance. You think I'm going to share some shit with you? You're wrong. You know? So that's what this program tells you to do, is you get a sponsor. I read the thing on sponsorship. You share your deepest, darkest secrets. I mean, right, sure. So I wasn't going to do that. But, you know, one thing that she did have, I used to call her. And we have, our bedroom is on the third floor of this house because our garage is at the bottom. And the living room is down below. And the first thing my sponsor suggested was that I quit yelling at my husband because I'm losing my voice all the time. So I would call, she'd say, just don't talk to him. Just don't even talk to him. So I would call her, stand at the top of our stairs. My husband would be downstairs. My kid was probably in his room, and I'd be screaming at her, that MF did this, and that MF, yelling at everything that I wanted to say to him, to her. So, you know, I don't know if she ever tried to stop me. I can't remember, because I wouldn't have heard her. But at one point, I did hear her say, I want you to go buy a really pretty journal with blank pages, and every time you're mad at Bob, write in red what you're mad about. So I go, I go to this drugstore and I'm going, a pretty journal, because I never journaled in my life. Is that like a diary? Let me go look at these books over here. And so there's all these like blank page book things, and I'm like, should I get that one? Which one's pretty? I couldn't even decide. Could not even decide on what I might like. So I just picked one at random. Every day I was writing and reading that thing. Every day. And every night I would lay it on his pillow. Every night. But I would find it back on my pillow. So I don't know if he ever read it. Well, I do know. I know that he didn't. Today I know that he didn't because he has a good AA program. But a miraculous thing happened. After about a month, or maybe two, I wasn't losing my voice at all. I wasn't yelling at him. I would run upstairs, right with it, you know? And then I would lay it on his pillow, but I wasn't yelling at him. You know? It was crazy. So, and then, simultaneously, she had me read in those little books, they're called Daily Readers, everything on step one, and then write in another book what I thought about each step. So I had them all color-coded. Okay, all the reds are step one, all the greens, everything in this book is step one that's red. I gotta read it all and then write. So I had all these little sticky things everywhere sticking out of all these books, and I did that. And then I would tear them all off. Okay, I've done that, let's go read step one. And then she had me do the same thing with step two. And then she had me do the same thing with step three. I don't know how long this took. I know it took some time. But I was like, okay, I'm done. Let's get it. You know, and let's meet, let's read. You know, because I was going to get this done. I only had a year. And we're already like in June. Right? So that's in my head. Did I tell her that? No, of course not. Because I can't be honest. I don't know how to be honest about stuff. It hurts too much. So I did that. And then I'm laying in bed one night, and my husband, he does drive for a living, and he also does commercials. So he gets up in the middle of the night, the alarm didn't go off, and he's bouncing off the walls trying to get all this stuff organized. And whenever he did that prior to program, I would get really upset. You're waking me up, why don't you do that? Well, this one night, I just sat up in bed and watched him quietly bounce off these walls trying to get everything organized because he was late. And I called my sponsor when he left. I'm ready for step four. I'm good now. I don't yell at him. I'm accepting this bad behavior, blah, blah, blah. So we did a step four. And it went well, except, and she's in this room tonight. I'm on my fourth sponsor, just so you know. And I think I'm starting to be honest with this one. Just starting to be honest, because it was very difficult. So she had me do an autobiography as a fourth step, and I'm like, what the heck? What do you mean, autobiography? Well, you write about yourself from day one. I said, no. I'll start at 25. And she said, no, you have to start from the beginning, what you remember about this and this and this. No, I'll start at 25. Oh, and I'm going to type it. No, you have to write it. So there was a battle there, but I let her win. So I started writing, but it was like a timeline. It wasn't an autobiography at all, it was a timeline. Moved to England here, moved to Florida there, moved to here there, moved to that. How did I feel about each move? Fun. You know? And then when I got to 24, just bordering on 25, my father had retired from the Air Force, so the moving stopped. He retired in Sacramento, and that's where I lived for the next 30 years until I met Bob, who also has the same name as my dad, Robert William. Crazy. So I lived there for 30 years, so I thought, I'll just start at age 25, telling the truth as much as I can. And so I was still going to type it, and I typed it out, and I had a whole 2 pages. My autobiography was 2 pages. I'm so proud. So things happen, and I know there I sabotaged that relationship intentionally, subconsciously, I don't know, but getting too close to one person was so uncomfortable, I was out of there. I did that with my second sponsor, with my third sponsor, and now I'm starting to feel that with my fourth sponsor also. I mean, I picked someone who lives in Santa Monica, so I, you know, this program is teaching me how to be honest, and it's what I want to do. I want to be honest. I want to share my past in its most truthful way, but it's very difficult. It is still difficult to this day. I'm getting there, but it is progress, not perfection, as someone said. I think it was David. So I'm working on my like seventh, fourth step, trying to get honest. And this is my seventh one. Yeah, it is. I'm working on the seventh, fourth step in 7 years. But the last four have been all within the last 9 months because I'm trying to get honest. And the one honest thing I can say is that I am honest with my sponsor about my dishonesty. So I've learned that in here as well. That's how it was. I came from a very dysfunctional family. My parents were only 19 and 20 years older than me. My mother went to England to meet my father when I was 5. She was 25. She had a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 3-month-old baby, and flew to England with all three of us alone on an airplane to England from California. I don't know if I could have done that today with 3 children. And that's the woman that raised me, me and my 4 siblings. She moved with my father and the 5 of us from base to base to base until I was 24 years old. I can remember we were leaving Maine to go to Puerto Rico, and I had my first boyfriend that had his first car. He had a little 1961 Porsche. And I said, "He's going to take me to the airport, Mom." You know, my father was already in Puerto Rico. Well, it was raining really hard. His windshield wipers didn't work. The car stalled somewhere, and my mother is on the tarmac with the other kids, just freaking out, thinking she's going to leave me in Maine, when we pulled up on the porch to the tarmac. And that's the kind of life, that's what I put my mother through. just that one incident was pretty horrendous. As a mom, I would be freaking out if my child did that to me as well. And I have a great respect for my mother. I recently lost her, that's why I'm going there. She was an amazing woman. I'm not that Al-Anon that came in feeling like I was broken. I'm that Al-Anon that came in criticizing you because you didn't know how to live your life. And what I learned was that I was arrogant, smug, and self-righteous, and that spells ass. And I don't really know when that started, but I'm going to guess around 25. So, you know, I was the other mother to my younger siblings who were 8, 9, and 10 years younger than me. I remember my father saying to me, whenever any of the three did anything wrong, why did you let them do that? So the mother that 7 was raised by was that mother that started mothering at age, I think I was 7 the first time I babysat, but 12. I remember when I was 12 and they were little, my parents would go out partying, I'd tell them, get under the coffee table because there's someone looking in the window. And then I put my feet up on the coffee table and watch TV, and they just sit under there all quietly and scared. You know, that's the kind of person that I am. So, yeah, 7's right. He had a really hard time in school because I would go, let me see that. Let me make sure you did that right. Let me see that. Let me make sure you did that right. Let me see that, to the point where he wouldn't even do anything. He wouldn't do anything at all. And I learned in Al-Anon that I can't control anything, even my child. I can have an influence on him. That influence can be love, understanding, and acceptance. And that's what I try and practice today. I'm still somewhat of a warden, and it's only out of love. So thank you for that.